My name is Frances Vaughn, and I'm a transpersonal psychologist, and I've been involved with transpersonal psychology for more than 30 years now. I first started when I became an assistant editor on the journal in 1973, soon after I had earned my PhD in psychology. And since that time, I've served as the president of the association, and I continued to serve as an editor of the journal. I taught for many years at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, and I've had a private practice in psychology for now almost 30 years. Well, the definition of transpersonal psychology has evolved over the years, but I was attracted to transpersonal psychology because it really addressed the whole person, and it was the only branch of psychology that took an interest in the spiritual dimensions. In those days, 30 years ago, you couldn't even mention the word spirituality around psychologists because they were all trying so hard to be scientific about everything, and spirituality was just not scientific enough. So humanistic psychology emerged as the first movement which tried to address the whole person. And they talked about integrating body, mind, and emotions. But they left out spirituality. So a group of psychologists decided that they really wanted to expand the field of psychological inquiry to include what we call transpersonal experiences. And transpersonal experiences are those experiences in which the sense of self extends beyond the narrow confines of ego, and people sometimes describe them as peak experiences. They feel connected to all and everything. They feel a sense of peace and joy, and in some sense, it's a mystical kind of experience, but there's a wide range of different kinds of transpersonal experiences, and we felt that it was really important to include those dimensions of the human experience when for anyone who was really interested in understanding how the mind works and what helps people grow and feel a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction in life. Well, I think it's a wide range of different kinds of people who are attracted to transpersonal psychology. I think there are those who are curious about inner experiences, and there are those that are really kind of intrigued by the possibilities of the human potential. And there are those that really are wanting to understand more about how the mind works and what is most helpful to people that are struggling with various challenges in their lives. It really grew out of the humanistic movement. The people who started the field of transpersonal psychology were originally humanistic psychologists. Anthony Sutich, Abraham Maslow, Stan Grof. These were people who had already established themselves as credible researchers, and they really wanted to expand the field to include more of the human experience. And it also was in contrast to behaviorism and psychoanalysis, which were the dominant fields in psychology at the time. Behaviorism was concerned primarily with the measurement, prediction, and control of behavior. And psychoanalysis was more based on a medical model of pathology and cure. So the humanistic and transpersonal movement really began to look at the human potential and the possibilities for growth, the recognition that what we call normality is really only a fraction of what's possible for human beings, that it is possible to learn how the mind works and contribute in a deeper way to the relief of suffering in the world. So I think it was motivated by a desire to speak to what is really relevant for people when they're wrestling with existential issues and when they're wrestling with life transitions. And it seems that people tend to open up to spiritual questions when they arrive at disappointment in life. And they say there are two ways of arriving at disappointment. One is by not getting what you want, and the other is by getting it. And when you find that the things, the ego goals that you've been pursuing are not fully satisfying, you tend to say, well, there must be more. And it's that search for something more that really is the impetus for human growth and development. The other event that often triggers a spiritual awakening is a close encounter with death. And whether it's a close encounter with one's own death or with the loss of a loved one, people begin to ask the questions, what does it all mean? What is it all about? So transpersonal psychology began to address questions of value, meaning, and purpose in human life, and that's what really intrigued me. And so I became interested in studying different religions and practicing meditation and exploring different ways of looking at the human experience. Well, I think it was definitely a factor because there was so much happening. People were experimenting with psychedelics, and there was so much change going on. And of course, living in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, we were very much involved with the Cultural Revolution. I think that what some of us wanted to do was understand better what was happening. It's as though we wanted to bring a sense of trying to make sense out of what people were experiencing and trying to understand it better and recognize that these powerful substances could be either beneficial or harmful depending on how they were used. Some people were engaged in serious research, and of course others were just using substances recreationally, which was much more risky. And so it was an attempt, I think, to catch up to what people were experiencing, to really be able to respond appropriately and help people through the difficulties that sometimes resulted from their explorations. Oh, I think the whole human potential movement was very much a factor here, so that people were beginning to get interested in growth experiences. They recognized that group experiences, for example, going to workshops, going to conferences, just opened up new worlds that they hadn't explored before. So there was a sense of a richness of human experience that had not yet been studied, had not yet been understood in an adequate way. I think the developmental perspective that Ken Wilber brought to the field was also significant. When his books were published, people began to see that the evolution of consciousness was not something that stops when you reach adulthood. In fact, that may be just the beginning, and that we continue to grow throughout life, and that there are tremendously many more potentials than we're usually aware of that we can unfold, and it can lead to more peace, love, and joy. I think he's made a tremendous contribution to the field, and although he's no longer identified particularly with the field of transpersonal psychology, his contribution has been really significant, and it has given us a developmental framework within which to view the unfolding of the transpersonal potentials. And I think, of course, the psychology of Carl Jung has also been influential, and the exploration, for example, of archetypal levels and the creative potentials of the human unconscious have all contributed to the field. I always felt that while Jungian Jungian views were enormously intriguing and really offered tremendous insight into the way the psyche works, that it stopped short of integrating some of the Eastern disciplines and Eastern thought, which have been also so influential in the field. It was just about that time was when Buddhism began to take root in this country. And so the psychology of Buddhism and the meditation practices, for example, Siddha Yoga or Sufi practices, Buddhist meditation in all its forms, whether it's Zen or Vipassana or Tibetan Buddhism, were all becoming increasingly popular. And it was only transpersonal psychology that really made any effort to understand what was happening when people did take their meditation practice seriously. So I think we've learned a lot from Eastern disciplines, and they certainly have been a major contributing force in this field. It's, as Stan Grof has said, it's a combination of ancient wisdom and modern science that transpersonal really aims for. Well, I think the main difference is that it includes an interest in the spiritual dimension of experience. And the thing that's happening now is that there is an increasing appreciation of the importance of spiritual issues in mainstream psychology. And in that sense, I think the transpersonal movement has done its work. It has, in fact, made it acceptable to be a scientific psychologist and still open to the importance of spiritual issues. I think there's a difference between a transpersonal psychologist and a psychologist who's simply interested in the psychology of religion, because the religion is not the same as spirituality. I think of religion as offering a creed, a code of ethics, and a community to people. But I think of spirituality as a subjective experience of the sacred, and that people can be in touch with their spirituality whether or not they belong to an organized religion, whether or not they go to church or whether they don't. That spirituality really exists in the hearts and minds of men and women everywhere. And in some ways, it's about their most important meaningful values in their lives. And this takes different forms. I think spirituality, for example, may be theistic. There may be a belief in God, as there is for Christians and in Judaism and Islam. Or it may be non-theistic, as in Buddhism. Or it may be polytheistic, as in shamanism, for example. So that there's no particular form or particular belief that is required of a transpersonal psychologist. It simply says that this is a person who is interested in these many different ways of accessing the spiritual dimension of experience, which is so important for people, particularly at the end of life, for example. That's when sometimes spiritual issues will surface when they haven't surfaced before. If people have not paid attention to that dimension of experience earlier, it tends to sometimes really come in a very forceful way towards the end of life. So in some way, spirituality is very relevant to dealing with existential issues such as, you know, freedom, alienation, confrontation with mortality. These are the basic questions that are addressed by spiritual inquiry. I think that the transpersonal psychology is an effort to understand these questions without espousing a particular belief. In that way, a transpersonal psychologist would be different from a pastoral counselor, because a pastoral counselor works within a particular tradition. And certainly there are some people who may be transpersonal psychologists who do not espouse any particular tradition. They may be practitioners in one tradition or another, but hopefully in their psychological practice, they're not trying to persuade anybody of anything. They're not trying to impose their beliefs. They're simply engaging in an inquiry into what really matters for people. I think traditional mysticism is probably less interested in translating the experience into something that has is comprehensible to people who haven't had the experience. That it's an effort to talk the rational language, and I think that mysticism generally is divorced from the scientific or the rational to a certain extent. So in a way, transpersonal psychology is an attempt to bridge the two, to bridge the scientific view with the mystical sense of experiences that transcend our rationality and that transcend our sense of separateness. I suppose it has elements of both. I think it depends on how a person who is involved in it is approaching it. For example, for someone like Charles Tart, it's definitely a science. And for others, it may be a social movement that they are attracted to because they like to be able to be with like-minded people, and they feel that it has some relevance to their personal lives. And so it has elements of both. Well, again, I think transpersonal psychology really attempts to be more disciplined than many of the New Age explorers. One of the challenges for transpersonal psychology is to sort out what is really solid and what is flaky, or what is a product of fantasy and imagination. Magical thinking is common in New Age circles, and transpersonal psychology tries very hard to sort out magical thinking from empirical evidence of psychic phenomena, for example. And so maintaining an open mind and yet a certain amount of skepticism is probably characteristic in the best sense of a transpersonal psychologist who attempts to be open to dimensions of experience that are perhaps unusual, and yet is not going to accept anything that anybody says without some kind of rigorous investigation. Well, I think the main asset that a transpersonal psychologist brings to the practice of psychotherapy is an openness to the many dimensions of experience that transcend ordinary rationality. So that while cognitive psychology works with beliefs, it's very much grounded in the rational. And there are certain experiences which are not rational and yet are very significant for people. And I think it's important to recognize that non-rational experiences aren't necessarily pre-rational, that some of them are trans-rational. But it doesn't mean that all non-rational experiences are trans-rational. Some of them are pre-rational. Some of them really are regressive, and that may or may not be regression in service of the ego, but that a person needs to be able to manage their experiences in such a way that it doesn't totally destroy or disrupt their lives. And that so there needs to be some grounding. It's not a matter of getting rid of the ego, but simply making friends with the limitations of ego, as they say in Zen Buddhism. It's as though there's a role for the ego as an organizing principle, but you don't want to be confined to living only in that particular realm of experience. I think the openness to the subtle realms of experience and to the possibility of transcending that. For example, a transpersonal psychologist would probably emphasize learning to witness one's experience. And in my own work, I like to work with dreams a lot because dreams often cut through our defenses and bring up things that are really emotionally loaded, that are really intense. And often we can get guidance from our dreams in certain ways if we learn to understand them. So that's really exploring another dimension of consciousness. That's exploring what we call the subtle realms. And instead of being locked into one perception, one perspective. I think Ken Wilber's idea of vision logic, which allows us to hold more than one perspective at a time. In other words, recognizing that every perception is partial and that what I see may or may not match what you see, but we can maybe explore our differences in such a way that we both learn something and that we can both expand our view, our way of seeing, our way of looking at things. And so one of the factors that enters into psychotherapy is how does your worldview affect your experience? And how do your beliefs create your experience? And how does your experience reinforce your beliefs? And can we question some of those? Can we explore your dreams? Can we find out what else is going on that you're not already fully in touch with? So I think there are many dimensions to transpersonal psychology that are available to a client that would not be available in a strictly rational or medical approach. And so much of psychiatry these days has become biological psychiatry. And I would say that they certainly make a contribution to relieving suffering for many people. And sometimes it's appropriate. But on the other hand, that's not all there is. There's so much more that gives us a sense of meaning and purpose to a person's life. And that's what can be explored with a transpersonal approach. Well, again, transpersonal psychology, I think, does not espouse a particular belief. It really is more of an inquiry that, as Carl Jung said, the role of the psychologist is to be empirical. In other words, to learn from as much as possible from a person's experience. And that's very different from saying that a person should believe in a particular dogma or should follow a certain teaching. One of the things that has come up for me often in my practice is that I've worked with people who have been part of a religious movement or have joined a particular practice and or a particular teacher, and then they come to a point where it's time to leave. And then making the transition back into the world can be very difficult. And so that's where a transpersonal psychologist can be helpful, because the transpersonal psychologist hopefully has an understanding of why a person would choose to follow a devotional path and be with a particular teacher and not discount the value of that, but also encourage the person to take the next step, which may be to leave that particular group or that particular teacher. So that I would hope that transpersonal psychologists would not be trying to impose their worldview on their clients, but simply encouraging them to continue the inquiry. The fear of the non-rational realms of experience often prevents people from exploring the dimensions of what I would call trans-rational. And that's where the transpersonal psychologist has a contribution to make. Because, for example, people feel very safe working with Stan Grof because he understands the realms of the human unconscious and in a way that he's not going to pathologize something. People get reassurance and then they can integrate those experiences, those self-transcendent experiences in such a way that they really grow from them. And it really does transform their lives sometimes. And many times they feel that they get a great deal of benefit from the willingness to go into the the transpersonal realms. But it is important to have someone as a guide who is familiar with it and can provide that context. In therapy, usually the therapist provides the context and the client provides the content. And the process is what happens between the client and the therapist. And of course, the relationship that develops is crucially important, so that there's a certain degree of trust. And in my work, I let the client lead. It's different from teaching, because when you're in psychotherapy, you're really responding to what the client brings to therapy, whatever their concerns are, whatever their struggles are, whatever their fears are. And if you provide a safe place for them to explore what they need to explore, it's amazing. They really get better. It's just providing that safe space and being fully present. I think that that's the presence of a person who really can listen deeply and who is not afraid of exploring many dimensions of experience can make a big difference in the healing of some of those internal splits. Sometimes I think that psychotherapy is about healing the split mind and the broken heart, and that people do get better if they can be in a relationship which allows them to do what they need to do. But I don't know what somebody needs to do when they come in. I have to discover that as they tell me about themselves. So that when it's not healing, it's not something we do, it's something that happens if we're willing to stay present and do the best we can. Awareness in and of itself can be curative. In other words, if we bring awareness to our internal conflicts, if we recognize the patterns that we're stuck in, that awareness can help us make changes, make the necessary changes. Healing awareness is really the awareness that is a non-interfering, accepting, unconditional positive regard that we can give to another person, but we can also learn to give that to ourselves. As one person said, oh, when I go and see my therapist, he doesn't say much. But when he listens, I suddenly hear myself saying all new things. And it's that capacity to stay fully present with someone and give them the opportunity to discover inside their own psyche what it is that's needed for wholeness. That everyone, in a sense, I think, wants to grow into their wholeness. And everyone has the potential to do that. It's as though they're discovering their true nature. And I think that's the process that we're privileged to witness as we participate in this work. And it's just very exciting and rewarding. I find sometimes people say to me, oh, don't you get tired of listening to people's problems? And they say, I never get tired of listening to somebody who's talking about the things that really matter to them. And that's what people do when they come to see a therapist. They talk about the things that really matter, the things they care about most, the things they can't talk to anybody else about, all of the things all of the taboo topics and all of the things about their own inner experience that they feel shy about or that they don't want to talk to their colleagues or friends about. And I think that part of the task for all of us, whether we call ourselves transpersonal psychologists or not, that we all need to find a way of connecting the inner life of mind and spirit to the outer life of action in the world. And so, in a sense, transpersonal psychology is a service profession, in that effort is something that we make for ourselves as well as for others, is how to avoid the split that sometimes happens between what's going on inside and how we're behaving in the outer world, so that we can live divided no more or have a sense of wholeness. And I think that I've had the opportunity and the privilege of working in many different countries all over the world during the last 30 years. And what I find is that while I appreciate cultural differences and I've learned a lot from going to other cultures, that underneath, we're all dealing with similar issues. We all have hopes and fears, and we all have our struggles in this life. And I don't think I've ever met anybody anywhere that didn't want to be able to give and receive love. There are plenty of obstacles to that and plenty of things that get in the way, but I think everybody longs to be able to give and receive love. So part of the work is removing the obstacles to that awareness so that we can feel more fulfilled in our relationships and have a sense that what we're doing makes a difference. I think that once people feel whole and feel better, they want to make a contribution. They want to participate in some way and make a difference in the world. I think that's a sign of health. Self-actualization and self-transcendence seems to manifest as a desire to make a contribution in the world. So I think it's the opposite of what is sometimes assumed. Sometimes people think that if someone goes off to meditate a lot, that they're withdrawing from the world. But in my experience, the deeper a person goes into their inner exploration, the more fully they want to participate and make a contribution to the world. So it's not an either or. It used to be that people who had to make a choice between a religious life or a monastic life or a secular life in the world. But now, more and more, I see people really looking for ways to integrate the two, to be able to do both. I think they're mutually enhancing. I have found that I think one of the best things for therapists in training is to learn to meditate, because it does quiet the mind and give one a capacity for listening more deeply to oneself and others. And I think that when somebody is in therapy and they also have a meditation practice, it's as though the process goes along much faster, because when you sit down to meditate, all sorts of things come up, and then it's all grist for the mill for the psychotherapy process. So I find that people who are meditators tend to make much more rapid progress in therapy, and I think that it's just a real asset. However, I don't think one is a substitute for the other. I do think that one of the splits that exists in our culture that hopefully will be healed is that often meditation teachers do not think that therapy is valuable, and sometimes there are some therapists that don't think meditation is valuable. And so I hope that's another bridge that transpersonal psychology can help to build, so that they can recognize the value of the other discipline and see how much complementarity exists between the two. I think a lot of meditators put up with an awful lot of suffering because they are struggling with issues that could be resolved quite readily in therapy. And so the path doesn't need to be so arduous, perhaps, if we can recognize that help is available. And certainly in therapy, the therapy goes deeper, faster, if a person has a meditation practice. Well, once again, a spiritual teacher usually has a particular set of beliefs and a particular worldview that they are attempting to transmit. And hopefully, a psychotherapist is not in a teaching role so much as in a guiding role, so that rather than bringing content into the consulting room, it's more of a responding role, in my view. So establishing the context of therapy is different from providing the content of teaching. So a teacher may be both a teacher and a psychotherapist at different times, but I do think they are different roles. Self-deception is probably one of the main pitfalls on the spiritual path. The belief that there is one true way is a pitfall. I see that usually as a red flag. If someone says this is the only way, in my view, there are many different paths up the mountain, and they're not all identical, but they all have their validity. It's I think, unfortunately, one of the reasons we have religious wars is because people think that their way is the only way. And we see that also in our own country, and that opening the mind to recognize the validity of other people's points of view and perception is something that is really incumbent upon anyone interested in transpersonal psychology and trying to understand what it is that contributes to people's wanting that kind of certainty. And being certain, of course, doesn't mean being right. So we have to recognize, respect somebody who is certain that they found the one true way, and yet hopefully keep an open mind to thinking that there might be a better way, or there might be another way, or someone else thinks there's a better way, or someone else might choose a different path. So that is one of the major problems, I think, with a person who is on a spiritual path, that at first, very often, new recruits to a particular practice may become very enthusiastic and want to proselytize a lot, and then as time goes on and they become wiser, they're perhaps more open to recognizing the value of different paths. The other thing that happens is that we tend to think that because I have found something that is of value for me, everyone else should do it. And then one of the things that happens is often after a while we find that what was so meaningful at one time isn't so meaningful anymore. It's as though you go through a period of disillusionment or disappointment, and recognizing that what you've gained, or what the value that something has for a period of time, may not be always valuable. Your life changes, you change, you may need to move on. So there's a way of thinking about it that has been helpful to me, which is that we have stepping stones, and we can turn our stepping stones into obstacles. And we can also turn our obstacles into stepping stones, so that when we find ourselves challenged or we find ourselves dissatisfied, I think of it as a kind of divine discontent. And that it may be that something is prodding us to move on. And of course, Ken Wilber has said that that when you're trying to break through to a new level of awareness, you tend to get depressed because your world isn't working anymore. You're just not satisfied with what you've been doing. You don't think that it's really as meaningful as it was 10 years ago or something. So that can be an opportunity for growth and for moving into a new level of awareness that hopefully is wider and more encompassing and ultimately more satisfying. I think gender differences are primarily cultural, and that in a sense, when you talk about the soul is transgender. In other words, a person, if you have a belief in the soul as incarnating numerous times or whatever, it may incarnate as male or female, that the soul is neither male nor female. And you don't need to have a belief about the soul in order to have a transpersonal experience, obviously. But I do think that transpersonal experiences may be influenced by your cultural imprint, because after all, nobody grows up unconditioned. We all have some conditioning in our lives. But that ultimately, self-transcendence means transcending those gender differences. we bring to our transpersonal experiences our own personalities, our own viewing frames, our own background and conditioning. But the deeper we go and the further we go on the spiritual path, the less we're hampered by our personal history. So that personal history is relevant as long as it's both a stepping stone and can become an obstacle. So at some stage it's irrelevant. But nevertheless, most of us have to work through it. And that's where we can help each other along. Well, I meditate every day, and but my path has been very eclectic over the years. I've sampled many different practices, and I have learned something from all of them. I feel very grateful that I've been exposed to so many different teachings that have really made a difference in my life. And A Course in Miracles is one of them, and Buddhist meditation is another. Some of the Sufi practices have been another influence. Siddha yoga many years ago. So that I feel it's been incredibly rich, and I really feel a lot of gratitude for the many experiences that I have been able to taste by being open to exploring different practices. I think it's hard to describe. I think it's hard to describe in the same way that, how would you describe the experience of waking up in the morning? It's as though when you're in a dream, you think that's reality, the way it is. Then all of a sudden, you wake up and you discover that it was only a dream. And I think that's what happens in our lives, that we at some point begin to recognize that all of the past and all of the future exist only in the mind, and that our reality is in this present moment, and that a spiritual awakening allows us to see how much of our lives is spent in dreaming. Most of our time is spent thinking about the past or the future, and that takes away from our capacity to live fully in the present. So spiritual awakening has something to do with waking up to being fully present in this moment, and to realize how much of our time is spent in dreaming. Well, the Course in Miracles came into my life in the 1970s, and it's been a very valuable teaching for me. I've studied a number of different spiritual traditions and done a wide variety of spiritual practices. And the Course in Miracles offered me a way to reconnect to Christianity, because my roots are Christian. And fortunately, I grew up as an Episcopalian with the teaching that God is love and our sins are forgiven, and that was the essential message of Christianity. So when the Course came along, it seemed to offer the same message in a different form. And so it came into my life at a time when I had just been through a divorce. And I started doing the daily lessons. And that was a year of healing for me. It was really helpful in helping me to release all of the anger and all of the fear that going through a divorce had generated for me. And so it really was a way of getting to a place of inner peace for me. And then I found that making it available to students that I was working with was also helpful, because it does challenge our beliefs and gives us a way of exploring a little more deeply what we do and don't accept, because certainly there are some things in there that people will not accept, and there are some things that really make sense and really ring true. So I found it very helpful to me, and I don't think that it's something that everyone should necessarily follow. It's a path. And actually, I usually suggest to people that they, if they're interested in it, to go to the material itself rather than to join a group or try to get someone else's commentaries on it, because everybody has their own view and their own interpretation. So I think it's nice to have that available. And it can be helpful, if particularly for people who have some kind of Christian background and they have, for some reason or another, been alienated from their traditional church. So it's a way of reconnecting with Christianity in a more subjective way. Well, I think it's particularly helpful for people who don't take to meditation, who don't like to meditate, because it doesn't ask you to meditate for very long, you know, not just a few minutes. And it is something that really can, you can follow it as a path, and it's unique in its emphasis on relationship as a path to awakening, whereas meditation really does not address relationships. It really is a solitary inward focus, and the Course is very strong on emphasizing the importance of relationship. So that some people find that very appealing. Hopefully, transpersonal psychology is liberating, that it really speaks to freedom of spirit and unconditional love, and that it really talks about optimal human potential, that it recognizes the limitations of our ordinary lives and our ordinary awareness and says, no more is possible. You can be free. You can live with peace and joy in spite of the state of the world. Because if you wait for the world to get straightened out before you can experience love or experience inner peace, you probably are not going to make it this lifetime. And I think that that possibility exists for everyone. So I would hope that rather than waiting for something outside to change, that we can focus on changing ourselves internally so that we begin to see things differently. And when we begin to see things differently, we recognize that our experience changes. And so it's as though the inner is the cause of the outer more than the outer being the cause of the inner. But many of us don't recognize that until we see people changing. For example, in psychotherapy, people come in maybe feeling like victims of circumstance. And then they begin to see that their choices, their intentions really do make a difference. And when they begin to take more responsibility for their experience changes. And then their life gets better. And they begin to own some of their freedom, to recognize their freedom. I sometimes think of that freedom is an inside job, as long as you're not in jail. Most of us, many people, don't feel free at all. And yet, hopefully transpersonal psychology can help us recognize that we really are already free, and that the truth makes us free. Because what I find in psychotherapy is that when people are able to tell the truth about their experience, then problems get resolved and healing happens. But they have to feel safe enough to be able to really say what's true. What do they really want? What do you ask for in your heart? That's really where healing comes from. I think the main job, in my view, at this time, is that sense of giving people permission to connect their inner life with their outer life, to really honor the inner experience. And the inner experience is so neglected in our culture as a rule that much of the work in therapy is remedial in the sense that it's reclaiming that sense of authenticity that comes from being in touch with one's deepest convictions and truth. And so it's that work of connecting the inner life of mind and spirit with the outer life of action in the world that I think is the main task that we hope to be able to continue. I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. I think transpersonal psychology may become more widely known, or it may simply be integrated into the mainstream and with different names. I think it has already had an impact, and I don't know where it will go from here, whether it will continue to be a separate discipline or separate movement, or whether it will somehow find its way into the mainstream and then be unrecognizable as a separate discipline. That remains to be seen. All I can say is that in retrospect, looking back over the past 30 years, it has been a wonderful evolution. It's been wonderful to see it grow from a tiny seed that was born in the minds of, you know, a handful of people to a really widespread movement that is now all over the world and that people are benefiting from it. And so I feel it's been a privilege to be a part of it all these years. Yes, it has. It's been a tremendous, shall I say, it's been a gift for me to find work that was truly meant a lot to me, that it has allowed me to connect with people who share a deep, wide vision of reality. And I just feel so much gratitude for the many opportunities I've had to meet people all over the world who share this vision and this capacity for deep connectedness. And it has made a big difference in my life.